Hello and welcome to the Chamber Talks Business Podcast. My name is Sean Rose and I'm your host for this podcast. And I have some very positive news for you today. We're joined by everybody's favourite co-host, Tom Mongan, who is back to join us once again. Tom, how have you been since we last seen each other? And we've had the Chamber Economic Conference. How was that?
Yes, good morning, Sean, and an absolute pleasure to join you again. And how long have we got? Because, oh my life, what a time we've had. But the conference, I think, was superb, and the guest speaker. But I think my defining moment in the whole of that conference was when the whole room stood up to applaud our guest this morning. Absolute quality.
So talking about our guests this morning, we are joined by Louise Bennett, OBE, a Deputy Lieutenant of the West Midlands. Louise was the Chief Executive of the Coventry and Warwickshire Chamber from February 2003 and is stepping down this month of December. She was also a Director of Policy at the Greater Birmingham Chamber of Commerce and was awarded an OBE for her services to Enterprise in 2007. We are delighted to join you today, for you to join us today, Louise. Welcome, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you so much. Looking forward to retirement, semi-retirement. Been planning it for an awful long time. Looking forward to doing more with my voluntary roles. You've mentioned a few, but I've also taken on, which I'm sure we'll talk about, the presidency of Warwickshire College University Centre. So looking forward, when we are retired as individuals, to giving more back to those voluntary unpaid roles. So I'm in a good place.
So you're at that point now where you've got those lifelong skills that you want to start putting back into the voluntary sector, into those sectors that are in need of those expertise. But let's go back before we begin. Well, let's not begin at the end. Let's begin right at the very beginning. Give us a bit of an update of what it was like growing up, what was interested you in your early years, and then take us through the first steps of your career.
So, growing up, I hope like most people out there, I was very lucky to have the unconditional love of mum and dad. That said, from a working class background, a background I would almost suggest nowadays many people would describe as one in poverty. So my mum and dad would have made the same decisions that people are having to make today out there as to whether you can put the heating on or whether you are going to put food on the table. And that would have been the kind of decision that my mum and dad would have made. But when you have safety, security and love, unconditional love, you can then do almost anything in life.
So what was your interests while you were in school? What was the big thing that caught your fancy and made you want to get excited to go to school in the morning?
So I didn't like school. towards the end of school, I probably wasn't going very often. Shouldn't say that, because I would encourage every young person out there to go to school, as they should, to do their GCSEs. I was actively encouraged by my dad, and I remember the head, to keep going. So I left school with the equivalent of GCSEs, not many, but the equivalent of GCSEs. My favourite subjects were English, English language, English literature. My least favourite, like a lot of people out there, was maths, even though later on in my life I went on to study that at degree level, statistics, perhaps to prove myself wrong that I could actually do it. But then I went to college, I went into further education, and my life changed.
I just think, listening to that, I think that that sort of message should be put out to a lot of young people to say, well, seeing what you have achieved in your life and listening to your early year, I just think that's phenomenal.
It shows we can all do it, doesn't it, really? I hope, maybe. But it does. It shows that with opportunity, with a little bit of luck, with hard work, because I have worked hard over the years, studying and in employment, working, that yeah, we can achieve what we want to do. And that would have been my mum's mantra, you see, when I was young, middle child sort of. My mum would say something along the lines of, oh, Louise will do it. So it could be anything. It could have been an exam, passing my driving test. And I used to think, well, you know, is that because she isn't particularly interested in what I do, or is she not proud of me? Of course she was proud of me. It wasn't. It was because it was that absolute faith. And she would just sit there and go, oh, Louise will do that. Oh, no, don't worry, Louise will do it.
Did anything ever hold you back?
Exactly that. So if you come from a background which isn't affluent, certainly my generation, yes, that could hold you back, definitely. So for example, I'll give you an example, because it shouldn't hold you back, and I wouldn't want it to hold anybody back out there, but I'll give you an example. When I was a young girl, I wanted to be a lawyer. I loved the law, and I loved studying the law when I went to university. So I wanted to be a lawyer, but I was clearly told that really, without the family connections and the networks, that wasn't going to happen, or I would possibly become a solicitor, go into law, but maybe not get very far. So yeah, a little bit of holding me back there.
Do you think that's still the same now? At the business landscape you look over now, do you think there's still that restriction for people from those type of backgrounds?
No, honestly, I genuinely don't. So I don't want it to sound negative or a whinge, because I genuinely do not believe that there are the same restrictions. I think life has changed. There's more opportunity out there for our young people, even our vulnerable young people. There's more focus on supporting every individual. There's more focus on equality of opportunity. I'm not saying there's not more to do. I'm not being complacent, but there is absolute opportunity out there. I've got no question about that.
So you spoke about not really liking school, but you got through it. You then went to college, you went to universities to study statistics. A lot of S's in that, I struggled there. But then what was the sort of early steps of your career? So what was the first thing you went into?
So I combined business studies. I combined business with statistics, sort of, then rooted myself through to HR, human resources, personnel, as we called it then. And that's how I launched my career. And again, in my generation, all of those years ago, and I think there are still some knocking around, but not very many, you could often go into employment on what we call graduate management trainee roles, posts. And I was very lucky to get employment as a graduate management trainee. And I went into HR to start with, personnel.
And what were the skills you transferred? What were the skills you sort of developed using that career that you've now transferred into your leadership role?
Oh, I think we all develop skills, knowledge, experience, intel throughout the whole of our career. It gradually builds and builds. Perhaps that allows you to become more relaxed, more mellowed, more confident. So it should. I don't see a sort of a one stop on building skills, building qualifications, learning. I genuinely see it as lifelong learning. And I've never, ever stopped learning, ever. I love learning. In my view, the best leaders, chief execs, managing directors, owner managers of businesses, are the ones that continue to learn. And that doesn't necessarily mean study, although I would encourage people to study. Those are the best leaders. They're actively listening and they're learning all of the time. And they're not complacent with that, because we can all learn. Yeah.
So a question to both of you then. What do you think are some of the best lessons you've learned across your careers so far?
Okay, good question. So I learned as I travelled through my career that any good leader, MD, owner, manager, particularly of a business, needs to get that balance right between... It's the saying, isn't it, being on the business or in the business. So needed to get that balance right between taking time out and thinking about the organisation, the business, thinking about its future, what's happening out there, how is the landscape changing, how do we evolve to that, how does it affect us, what are our customers saying, what are our suppliers doing. literally lifting your head and thinking about that, and then having to balance that, obviously, with running your organisation or your business. So yeah, that's been one of my greatest things I've learned along the way, getting that balance right, definitely.
For me, I think don't stop worrying about what other people think about you, and never be frightened to say or ask a question.
Definitely.
Because just because somebody else understands it, it doesn't mean that everybody in a room or in a school or whatever, never be frightened to ask.
Definitely.
And put your hand up and say, could you just explain that again? You know, because for everybody is good at something. So whether they're a cleaner, whether they're a managing director, everybody has an important role to play.
Definitely. And I think in doing that, the individual, the leader, is far more genuine, far more congruent, and then frequently viewed as more honest, open, trustworthy, humble, but in the right word, humble, if you know what I mean. I think by doing that, Tom, by actually saying, I haven't got a clue what you're all talking about today, or I don't understand what you've just said, could you just explain that to me? I think that's just being genuine and showing that you're not frightened and that you have got the confidence to learn more. Tell me.
I suppose when you first start out your career, you don't have that confidence at all. You sort of pretend you know everything because you don't want to look silly. So I see your point of it, that comes with that lifelong learning. You go, actually, I know what I'm good at. I know where my skill set is.
And you will have experienced that then, moving from where you were into your head of policy role at the Chamber of Commerce. You will have experienced that, because I did, Sean, in those early days. I mean, very similar to you, when I moved into Chambers of Commerce, being appointed, very similar, Director of Policy, political lobbyist, I had not got a clue. And it takes time to become confident, to contribute to a room, to talk at a round table, to do the radio or the TV without completely stressing yourself out that you might get it wrong. Well, so if you do, who died? So you've been there.
And I've seen you develop, you know, in the short space of time. I mean, when I first met you, you were like a rabbit in headlights. Now you are such a consummate professional.
So talking about that director of policy role at Birmingham, So you've had a career so far, you've developed, you, I believe, had your own business in the NHS.
Yes, I've worked in the NHS, ran my own business, done a little bit of lecturing on entrepreneurship, started in retail. I worked for the NHS for about 13 years, part of a senior team managing an acute hospital, 3,000 staff, 800 beds, I remember it well. And then I moved into the completely unknown world, to me, of Chambers of Commerce.
Hi, I'm Rob Jones and I'm from Coventry College. I'm part of the business development team, kind of focusing mainly on apprenticeships and helping businesses through finding apprentices and recruiting them, right from recruitment into placement. Coventry College has been a member with the Chamber for many years now, and it's a very good place to network with other businesses. There's always great events that are planned, and it's good to be part of it and putting the name of Coventry College out amongst local businesses and individual businesses as well.
So, Louise, you've been the Chief Executive for 19, almost 20 years.
Yes.
What do you think made you successful in that career, and what culture do you think you're leaving behind?
So, the success is always about a team, a good team. So I'm not a big fan of anyone who believes that they are the conduit to all of the success or all of the contracts or all of the wins. Because those people usually run to the hills when the problems emerge, or the challenges, or the stressy times or sleepless nights. So I believe in a team. I believe growing and developing a team. I believe in investing in people. I think if you've got a team around you who can essentially do your job in the main, because it then allows you to be a true leader, who can essentially do your job and run the business for you, then you have done a good job. And you have given those people opportunity. My leadership style is based easily on my values and beliefs. And my values and beliefs are about being genuine, honest, open, never hide anything, never telling truths, don't try and fudge it, be open, be honest, be trustworthy. People will prefer you to be like that. They prefer you to have some integrity. And then my other leadership style that I ought to mention is around autonomy, and that's a risky one. So that's where you can in business, you can't in all businesses, but where you genuinely believe that a person in their job, in their role, should be autonomous as long as they perform. I have a huge amount of patience with individuals, but that patience will run out if performance continues to be poor, but that's my HR background for you. But I believe in autonomy. We should allow a person to do their job, to do to their best ability, and as long as they do it and they perform, then that's all good.
So you talk about autonomy, you talk about giving people that trust. Do you think that's one of the most important things of the difference between a boss and a leader?
I think it comes with confidence and belief in people. I don't think it's about not performance managing, good performance management, good productivity. You expect all of that. You expect delivery. You expect to make some bottom line contributions, profit surpluses. But it is about absolutely the confidence to move from being a boss who might be a little bit more autocratic and feel the need to control everything to having the confidence to be a leader, which is absolutely, I've got good people around me, I invest in them, I develop them, just let them get on with the job. And as long as they do the job well, that's all good to the business.
And I think, again, absolutely valid point, and people will make mistakes, and as long as you can teach them and develop them and bring them on and explain, taking the time to say, well, not so much, Crikey, you've done that wrong, but I may have done it a little bit of a different way.
Yes, absolutely.
So what do you think about, and explain the difference on what they've done to how you would have done it, and let them see. The only issue then is if they keep making the same mistake, that's when the problem arises.
And that's when your management kicks in, your management head. As in, okay, time to sort this, and a good leader will sort it. But it makes me smile what Tom's saying, because that never goes away, Tom. So even when you are in a leadership role, a chief exec role, an MD role, if I think about the role that I've had with you guys as my presidents and my non-execs, it's still about I make mistakes. But when I make mistakes, some of them have been quite scary along the way, when I make mistakes, I'm not going to hide it. I'm not going to bury it. I'm going to talk to the non-execs who I'm closest with, the ones I trust, the ones I'm always honest with, although I'm honest with everybody, I hope I am. And I'm going to tell them. I'm going to tell them, I need to give you a heads up, and I've done this many times, particularly to the chair of finance committee. I need to give you a heads up. I might have a little problem here. And then you go into solutions, don't you? Then you go into, okay, but... You know, these are my thoughts, these are my ideas, you know, to try and solve it, to sort it. And inevitably, touch wood, you know, 99% of the time, it's solvable.
Louise, what was it like? Could you explain your thoughts, your feelings, when you found out you're going to get an OBE, and what the whole day was like? I mean, could you possibly describe it? Because it must have been absolutely awesome.
So like everybody who might get a Queen's Honour or any organisation that might get a Queen's Award, I think it's shocking, astonishing, you don't believe it. absolutely don't believe it. It's almost a little bit surreal. You wait for it to sink in, and then obviously it has to sink in by the day that you go to Buckingham Palace, as I did. And of course, I had the huge honour of then receiving my OBE by our late Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, and and that is a memory that I can carry as a very special memory, having very recently, as we all have, lost Her Majesty. And again, a very scary moment, a very exciting moment. My family were with me, my children were with me. I remember where we were all briefed on how we should be received by the Queen, not receive her, received by the Queen, that it's ma'am, not ma'am as in jam, not ma'am, all the kinds of things, that it's Her Majesty and then ma'am, all the kinds of things we should do, whether we bow or curtsy, actually ladies can do either, that we don't touch the royals unless they reach out to you, as the Queen did with me. She reached out and shook my hand and then put my OBE onto my jacket. And then the final thing was, and if you freeze, don't worry. So when your name's called, if you freeze, don't worry. Somebody will just politely put a hand into your back and you go up and you're received by the Queen. And I thought, all right, okay, funny thing to say. And I froze. When they called my name, I froze, and I remember feeling that hand just gently in my back as if to say, please move on. and then I went up and received my OBE, and she did comment on receiving that OBE for services to enterprise, to business.
I guess it has to be just the surroundings, being into Buckingham Palace, and I remember my looking outside Buckingham Palace, and princesses live there, and the feeling must have been, I could understand, overwhelming, I suppose.
It was overwhelming, but and wonderful, and exciting, and funny as well. There were some funny occasions. I'm a big royalist, so I'll put that out there. Clearly, I'm a big royalist as a deputy lieutenant. The funniest moment when you go into the courtyard to have your photos taken with them, with your honour, your Queen's honour, your OBE or whatever, with your family. So we're standing there to have our photograph taken, and this lady ran past in front of us, in front of the camera. And we thought nothing of it. We just carried on smiling, waiting until the cameraman could actually do the photo. And then along walked Princess Anne and said, "Zara, really? There are people trying to have their photograph taken here." And that was just how lovely it was.
Hi, I'm Julie. I'm one of the directors of Ulsters Kelly. We're a firm of solicitors here in Coventry and Warwickshire. We currently have 5 offices across the region, Coventry, Nuneaton, Stratford, Leamington Spa and Southam. And our role is that we provide a full range of legal services to individuals and their families. We've been members of the Chamber of Commerce here in Coventry and Warwickshire for an awful long time now, and we really value and appreciate the support that they're able to provide us, and also the platform where we can meet so many other businesses across the area.
We've now reached the point of the podcast where we ask our quickfire questions. This is always the part where our guests tense up and they don't know what's going to come. But I'm going to do a very easy question to start. What has been your proudest moment being the chief executive of the Coventry and Warwickshire Chamber over the last 19 years?
So overall, my pride is in growing that chamber so that it is very much a sustainable Chamber of Commerce, which now has huge opportunity going forward. And then also my pride is positioning that Chamber of Commerce as a credible organisation with hopefully a huge positive reputation and brand.
I think my question would be, who's your favourite president? I'm only joking.
I've got a few. I love that question. I've got a few.
This is who is your favourite band and what is your favourite song?
Oh, Tom, that's too difficult. Because, as you know, I love all types of music, everything from the Elvis Presley era. In my youth, as you know, Tom, I was into quite heavy rock, metal, going to the Glastonbury's and the Reading Festivals and the Stonehenge's, as I should have not probably done. And then nowadays, you know, I love the Sam Smiths and the James Blunts. So my musical taste is very, very wide-ranging. I love it.
What's a moment in your chamber career that you always look back on and it makes you smile or laugh?
Good question. Probably there's many, but one that I always remember is that many, many years ago, and the Chamber of Commerce staff still do this, you know, we would support Children in Need or a local charity, and we were supporting, I think it was Children in Need, and the staff, bless, decided they'd go out onto the car park, huge car park, and they'd do some washing of people's cars, earn some money, put it towards the charity. That's fine, all very well and good. But we happened to have a rural business advice service at the time. And amongst our rural business advice service, we've got rural advisors who also owned very large farms, agricultural businesses. And so on the day of the let's wash the cars, the rural business advisor and some good mates turned up with their tractors to have them washed. So moments like that are the very small, simple, funny moments that make me smile.
Going on, funny, and my final question would be, is there anything that, say, that has happened that maybe looking back on hindsight, you would have changed?
There's nothing I would change about my time at Coventry and Warwickshire Chamber of Commerce. Absolutely nothing. But from more a life perspective and a career and home perspective, in hindsight, I would have spent more time with my family. And you know, I don't think that's any different today. So if I look back when my children were young, I haven't got huge memories of them being young because I was never with them. I was always at work, 50, 60 hours a week. Now, we'd all sit here, wouldn't we, and think, oh, thank goodness the world has changed. Thank goodness people have more flexibility, more mobility, and more opportunity to have life, work, home life balance. And yes, they do have more opportunity, but I bet you, if any of us go out there and ask an owner MD of a business, managing director, a leader of an organisation, be it local government, universities, colleges, a senior partner of a firm, they would still tell you the same, that that home life balance is not there. It isn't. So that's what I would change. If I had my life again, I would have spent more time with my children. I do make up for it now.
So as a Chamber CEO, you managed to go and see many parts of the world with your DIT team. Where is the best place and why?
So the best place in the world in terms of work travel that I've ever travelled to, without a doubt, is India. And I was very fortunate to go a couple of times. I'm fortunate to visit Mumbai, Bombay, fortunate to go to Delhi, fortunate to do the road, they call it the road to Agra, and go and see the Taj. Fortunate to meet the very, very many representative organisations out there in India, the ambassador, the local businesses, and see the stark difference between affluence and poverty, because we have no idea what that difference is unless you go somewhere like India, and that's or Africa. That's where you see the difference between, oh wow, that person has got some wealth and that person has absolutely nothing. India.
Well, we've reached the end of the podcast, and look, Tom, it was great to have you back as our co-host. You were the person who spearheaded this initiative to make sure we could do it. So thank you for coming back and joining us.
It was my absolute pleasure, Sean. I was so looking forward to this interview, and my word, it didn't disappoint.
Well, and our final thank you goes to Louise Bennett, the boss, the first chief executive I ever worked directly for, and the person who taught me lots of things. Louise, if you could go back and talk to your 16-year-old self and give them one piece of advice, what piece of advice would you give them?
I think it would be the advice that my mum gave me, or certainly what my mum instilled in me. So it would be no different. It's have ambition, have aspiration, and if you want to do something, you can do something. And I will counter that by saying what I've always said to my two children, and they are pretty amazing. I always used to say to them when they were very young, look guys, you can do whatever you want to do in life. I don't mind. You can be a checkout operator, you can be a cleaner, you can be an MD, an owner of a business. You can do what you like, but you will do it with an education. If there's one thing you will do, you will get an education. And both of my children did. They went on to get degrees, and they will go on to do their masters.
Louise, thank you very much for joining us on the Chamber Talks Business Podcast.